This week on RSVNB Update, rewards from Extinction are expanded with more worthwhile skilling on Aya and a passive Ring of Vigor. We also meet RuneScape's new Keeper for the first time and delve into a classic livestream Q&A. This is RSVNB Update, episode 880, recorded Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. Keep her calm and carry on. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of RSVNB Update. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shay.
Also joining us this week is Thaxi. Welcome. Welcome back. I think we last had you on the Scourge episode.
Yeah. Back again. We had some combat changes and...
And something very interesting this week combat-wise that informed some stuff we were doing. We'll get to that in fair time. But if you're joining us for the first time, RSVNB Update talks about the RuneScape news of the week, the updates, as it were, and I think in large part most people are happy with what we got this week, the Extinction Rewards update. We also have a Q&A from the new executive producer, Mod Keeper, and of course we'll also be talking about the Treasure Hunter and Augment changes, amongst other things, as we progress through this week's show. So Tanis, how are you feeling with what we got this week?
You know, I'm kind of two minds. I think that they are improved, and of course, the combat stuff is just peachy. You know,
that's
good. I just, you know, it. I was expecting something different.
I think
expectations kind of messed me up with this a little bit.
Fair enough.
That's where I'm at. Yeah.
All right. What about you, Thaxi?
Oh yeah. I mean, they made the rewards that, like, previously, effectively the reward was you got 900,000 experience, which, let's be frank, is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Now they've actually made the other rewards usable, and the Ring of Vigor is lovely.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
I like it. There's more to come, apparently. So. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's dive in. Post quest skilling station XP has been increased, and the amount of resources required for conversion has been reduced. And if you already had your skilling station set up, you enter the Dream of Aya, and you would get a boost from what you previously had, so you wouldn't be penalized from building beforehand. And the changes we're talking about here, previously it was a 10-1 XP ratio, now it's a 10-5 XP ratio, which when you simplify that down is of course 2-1, 2 resources to 1 XP. And you can now store up to 350,000 XP in your skilling station. So with that, that's 700,000 worth of your Anachronia resources you could dump into your skilling station of choice. And it buffs up to 135k XP instead of the base 15k if you did that beforehand. And they say this equates to about 43,000 XP per day over the selected skills if storage is kept up.
Yeah. I think because the base camp fills up every 10.5 days, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
If you've got max rank on it. So this means that once every... If you're putting XP into all the stations, they'll fill up within 50 days. You'd have full stations to go and AFK. And then AFKing those full stations down would take you like 6 hours.
Yeah.
So 50 days, six hours.
And the question, of course, at the end of this all is this still enough to get the lore fragments and other potential drops? But we'll talk about how those were buffed as well. With this, and I just have to say, I think this is where the two minds thing comes into play, Tanis. Like, for me, where I'm at, maxed 99s, I feel that this isn't necessarily a game changer for me, except for, you know, getting the lore stuff and maybe some XP if I decided to go for a 120 hunter or something. But on the other hand, if I was to decide on my skilling peer, which is still a level 3. That's a decision I make. So I handicap myself. So I won't be doing City of Sintistan anytime soon on that, unless I decide to throw that rule out the window and then progress through to Extinction. I would be over the moon for the free XP in skills like Fletching, Crafting, Construction, Hunter that this brought. If I didn't have 99s and I had done this quest. That's how I'd be looking at that if I didn't have 99s and I had just finished this quest.
I mean, yeah. even post 99s, it's,
yeah.
It gives you pet chance, you know.
True.
I don't think there's lower than 99 for even would even be interacting with this.
Well, I mean, when you look at the level requirements for Extinction and such, it's not a quest that max players should do. Only.
Right, but we also know that those level requirements are hidden in the quest requirements.
My alt, who has a quest cape minus this quest, because I've not gone back and done it on my alt yet. I've been waiting on that. My alt has about 80-ish for most non-combat stats.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to get used to this. I mean, that's a grand total of like 2 mil. So I've got, you know, 10 mil XP to gain in a lot of these skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get some use out of it for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like everything here is just amplified up to a point where it actually feels useful now with this. Whereas before, it was kind of just token XP, dare I say it.
I mean, it was token XP, and it wasn't worth the time to come and drop the XP off, frankly.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the thing that is kind of worth noting about that is that the way that they've changed it, the XP, like, you know, it equates out to 360,000-ish, 350,000 XP per hour. Of, like, when you actually go and spend time there, right?
Yeah.
So you add a little bit of time to, like, go and drop off your resources to fill it up, whatever. But it's, you know, that XP rate for some of the skills is really competitive XP-wise in terms of all of the, like, any gathering skills. And then for all of the, most of those skills, kind of Hunter might be the exception there, but, like, Fletching and Construction and Herbaler, like, it's a fully AFK method that costs nothing. I mean, it costs a little bit of time, but assuming you have your base camp set up and running and you don't need the resources elsewhere, it's a no-cost Herbaler. Like, it's, you know, that saves you a good bit of coin.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I do like it.
And we need to be clear, we're not calling this a skilling method. This is very clearly a quest reward.
This is a D&D. This is, yeah. It shouldn't have ever been called a skilling method if this is kind of the implementation of it is time gated. If it was a place that we could go and actually, you know, get nodes and obtain resources of any variety, then that would be a skilling method. You know, if it gave us base camp resources, regardless of how useless they might be, but decent experience, like something akin to the Ark, that would be a skilling method.
Would be a skilling
method. This is a D&D. Yeah. This is a D&D.
Yeah. Totally agree. And the one thing, like, and this is actually part of its design, so this isn't like a I mean, I don't know what this is. I know it's a critique, but it's just that it's a bummer that something I don't really have any use for or don't really want to interact with, which has been the base camp, I would have to do for this reward to mean anything to me. And that's just kind of a bummer.
It's true. I mean, that's the other thing.
Because you pretty much want to do this after your base camp is upgraded, right?
Well, if you don't have your base camp upgraded, you only have 10 workers if you only have the base camp.
Okay.
You get 1/6 as much XP, so that 43K becomes 7K.
Okay.
7K a day is, you know,
yeah,
and your coffers are much smaller, so you have to actually go more frequently. Like, it would be a hassle to
do it
without upgrading. Not worth it.
So in regards to many things, then it's kind of like a sliding scale then.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
I want to...
It's an in-game reward.
It is, and...
But again, my alt, which over the course of 3 months got Anachronia... So I have the base camp fully upgraded on my alt, minus all of the resource things. And again, that another reason to come to this is that it does drop the upgrade resources for the Anachronia base camp. So yeah, it does drop your essential oils and your dinosaur hides and tooth and rib bones. And so, you know, alt will be using this to obtain those rather than running 5 billion laps on that lovely agility course, which is a great agility course. It's just not...
You can say you don't like it if you...
80 laps was enough. That's what I'm going to say. Okay. 80 laps was enough.
Also, I want to give you a virtual high five because you're putting the show exactly where I want to go next. Thank you, Thad.
Go on.
I want to talk about the upgraded drops from this.
Sure.
I was blown away with what I got. And
you got the shooty straw.
I did. And I sold it. I sold it for 5 mil at the time. I just lost it yesterday when we were talking about this and the fact you can cosmetic override any range two-handed with it. Just the idea of running around and doing this instead of using a bow is absolutely hilarious to me, but that's beside the point. The drop table, when you're skilling, can give you mushed for your farm or dinosaur farm, laboratory relics from the Dragonkin lab, common, uncommon, rare, of course, the blowpipe pieces, and compacted Anachronia resources, plus the dinosaur rib bone, tooth, essential oils, and dinosaur pelt at a very rare chance. And plus all the ranch out of time animals as well, which I think needed to happen for this because I was looking at animals not too long ago and just some of these animals were, you know, stupidly rare in terms of the prices that you would have to pay for them. So I'm glad that that they brought these in.
Well, I think most of the dinosaur eggs were 5 to 10 mil. Yeah. And of course, the sub-variants of the dinosaurs were on the Grand Exchange, but not actually obtainable in-game. So people could just use them. I would be unsurprised if a couple people made some max cash stacks Monday morning by selling dinosaurs because somebody had been just storing a max cash stack in one of those dinosaur offers because they can't physically complete. But
yeah.
Anyways.
Overall, I'm very pleased with the drop table on this, just in terms of the alkables that you get and
it's more sources of alkables, which
we have to, of course, question in this day and age.
We do, but obviously they can't. Like, I wouldn't have been terribly mad if they'd replaced all those alkables with just mush.
Oh yeah,
Like they're in there because in theory we're floating in a fluid tube while we're in this dream.
Dreaming of Dragonkin.
Yeah, and there's Dragonkin relics apparently floating through us with this fluid. I don't know, dude. Whatever. there's some vague explanation. They just wanted to give us money, which, you know, I think I made a total of 700K from about 700K experience. So it seems like it's, unless you get lucky with some of those rare relics, about 1-to-1 for XP for GP. So it's like, it's not that, you know, it's like 300K an hour. It's bad money.
It's bad, but it's...
So it's fine.
But it's, you know, I'm going to look at this from the Iron Man perspective as well. The mush is good. Mm-hmm. The relics are good for...
Oh, the Iron Man. The animals, yeah.
Yeah.
Because for the, especially hardcore Iron Man that had to, like, do, like, killing those Slayer dinosaurs is a hard no. You know, it's like, I mean, not a hard no, but like that's spooky. Or and even if you wanted to just be a skiller or whatever.
Or even just spending that much time at Big Game Hunter.
Yeah, those eggs are expensive with Big Game Hunter points and or expensive, you know, obnoxious to obtain. And so having an extra source of dinosaurs is amazing for them. Yeah. And then there's also, you missed one of those.
Yeah, I was going to come back to the necklace of Salamence right now.
Ta-da, transitions.
A little salamander that you can put around your neck. Golden salamander, 15% accuracy and damage buff while fighting dinosaur-type enemies, and a 3% rarity drop boost from dinosaurs and the Rex Matriarchs. And no, it does not work on Raksha.
Yeah. It's a lovely damage boost. It is best in slot damage wise against the creatures it works on. And I think I'm not quite sure, but like purely cosmetically, without attaching any meaning to necklaces or value or whatever they are, I think it's one of the coolest looking necklaces in the game to just have a salamander chilling wrapped around your neck. Like, the little dude's a bro. Like, if I got one of these, I would be very tempted to just keepsake it.
Yeah.
To keepsake it. But I want the transmog, because it also allows you to transform into a little yellow salamander, which apparently, and I have not been able to confirm this, but apparently you can actually move while transformed. It's one of the only transforms other than the Gobi disguise kit.
Oh, the lizard people are taking over.
Exactly. That allows you to move while transformed. So it's really cool. It's also, if you get it from what we were... Somebody had found a drop rate for it that's on the wiki, and, you know, this early, I don't know the source or whatever, but based on that drop rate, it sounded like if you did this daily, it would be a 1 in 5 months drop.
It's direct from Mod Sponge. 1 in 500 rolling for materials at the skilling stations.
Got it. So we did I did some math in public chat. Also, the public chat, which is cool, they made the public chat for the area wide. So anybody at any of the stations can talk to anybody else, regardless of how far away you are.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. So we did some public chat math on Monday when everybody was there AFKing. And it, from the rates we were getting, it seemed like you rolled at the rate you got XP, it would be about 25 material packs per week. So it would be about 20 weeks, about 4 to 5 months to roll the necklace. Or with just your starting XP, if you had all six stations, it's like a 10 to 15% chance. So it's...
Boy, we're lucky this is untradeable. Otherwise, that would have a huge price associated with it.
Maybe, but again, most people probably still want to be using their Amulet of Souls, because all the dinosaurs that this thing works on hit pretty hard. And so you want that buff to Soul Split or to your Protection Prayers, depending on what you're using.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's potential.
But once again,
and again,
Rex Matriarchs were designed for mid-level, or rather entry-level to PVM content.
And they still do
15% accuracy and damage buff there is wonderful.
That's true. And we should mention while we're talking about it too, that it is currently always lost on death. So it shouldn't be taken to any of those places, because I imagine that will get patched. If you have one, please don't lose it. Because again, 20 weeks to get this thing back, it's going to be really obnoxious. You can read like that. I would be very sad if I lost one of these. So just keep that in mind. If you gain one of these, that maybe for now it's just a cool little yellow salamander transformation or a nice cosmetic to wear around, but I don't know that I would take it with me to combat.
Yeah, especially if you don't want to, you know, wind up accidentally dying or disconnecting and, you know, getting smacked by lightning at Thentraken or even any of the Slayer dinosaurs, let's just say.
Yeah, the Slayer dinosaur specs will knock you out, so.
All right. So that's most of the Dream of Aya buffs that were done with that. The next one is something everybody who has done the quest can benefit from, Aya or otherwise. The Pontifex Shadow Ring can now be imbued after finishing the quest, which increases the drop rates of unique items in the Elder God Wars dungeon by 2%. And if you have overcharged the ring, this is a passive, according to Mod Sponge.
Yay, cool.
I feel like this is a big deal, but I might be overselling it, I think.
Well, those drops aren't that big of a deal anymore, right?
Well, no. I mean drops if you're doing, like, hard mode Zuck or hard mode Glacier, yeah.
Or hard mode Carapac.
Yeah.
These are the new
God Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this I is, thought you meant
Oh, did
the
I say
older,
God Wars 2? Yeah. I meant the Elder God
yeah,
Wars dungeon.
And, okay.
Yeah, Elder. So this is like your fractured staff pieces and your Glacier weapons and Crypt Bloom. Yeah. I mean, 2% is not huge, but a free 2% buff is a free 2% buff. You know what I'm saying? That's not bad.
Yeah.
We take those.
Exactly.
And then The imbued version got, what was the, there's another benefit on it too, right?
Teleport to the effigy incubator, as well as increase the luck from tier 2 to tier 3, also improve the divination benefits and all the other sprite benefits as well.
Oh, I didn't realize they'd improve the other benefits.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, the teleport, that was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, and,
nice.
I feel like we got a good selection in terms of skilling rings here now with this, in all
yeah,
honesty.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So.
Honestly, it being tier 3 is nice. It's basically, it'll give you, I think that'll activate for most skilling things, right? Like, that's most skilling things will have the ability to activate that. The only thing that would be a problem would be, like, if you had a Grace of the Elves and you had your Saren Spirit that was trying to give you a Hazelmere Signet.
Yeah, and it's called the...
Gotta roll the luck.
It's now called the... We have... So, remember, this ring started out with a simple archaeology relic in as an Andra's quest, and it's just blown up since then. It's now a plus 3 prayer bonus, tier 3 luck, 3% divination XP, up from 1%, chronicle fragment spawn rate, raw opportunity spawn rate, Tannis if you're doing any more mining, and time sprite stuff, so... This goes in the mining tool belt. And what is it that you need to get the rare drop table on Saren Spirits? Is it 3 or 4? Luck?
So you can't physically roll a Hazelmere Signet Ring without having
without tier luck four of the luck. Dwarves. Okay.
Tier 4, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Understood. So if you're skilling, you'd probably still want to run the Luck of the Dwarves relic power and then just use this as the skilling ring.
The skilling benefits are good. So
yeah, and maybe this is the true story, and not necessarily the Aya stuff. Maybe this is the true reward from the quest.
I didn't realize that they'd buffed the skilling portions of it, and those are some relatively hefty buffs. I mean, that's the ring was worth wearing for some skilling before. Yeah. Now it's definitely up there. I mean, yeah. So. The ring is. I mean, talking about rings, they've done some good stuff with this reward with this release. They made one ring useful, and
they made one ring completely off the charts. Tan, is anything else on skilling stuff or Aya? Because I feel like
I think we covered it pretty well. It's the newest D&D weekly.
Yeah. And I swear, all these wonderful transitions weren't planned because we have to talk about rings because the Ring of Vigor can now be converted into a passive effect. That it's just this one innocent line in the patch notes, folks. That's all it is here, but it's a pretty darn big deal, to the point that we actually ran our micro lesson this week on this. And, you know, normally we talk about the micro lesson at the end of the segment, but I think I'm going to run the micro lesson now, and then we'll come back and discuss that. But before we get into that, I'll just say that if you have the Ring of Vigor, go talk to Vicindithus inside the Effigy Incubator Room. He'll give you a warp gem. Use the warp gem. It will consume the Ring of Vigor. And then now you have this passive vigor effect everywhere. And with that, I'm going to run the micro lesson from this week. In this micro lesson, you'll learn about the new vigor passive effect and ultimate rotations in RuneScape. A micro-lesson is a short and to-the-point video that teaches you a single concept. This time, one of our combat and PVM experts, Thaxi, who's a teacher on the Raid FC staff, is going to teach us about adrenaline management.
This micro-lesson is designed for a slightly more advanced audience than our early micro-lessons, for players who are manually activating their thresholds and ultimates. If you're not there yet, you should still have something to learn from this lesson, and maybe this lesson can be motivation to go out and try this with the new toys available this week. This week, the Ring of Vigor was made available as a passive, so let's talk about how to use the Vigor buff in a combat rotation. Very simply, the Vigor effect reduces the base cost of ultimates and special attacks by 10% of their starting value, and applies itself before other cost reduction buffs. To use the Vigor well, you also need to have an understanding of ultimate rotations. We're going to talk through this using a simple 1-minute timeline, with each tick on the timeline representing 6 seconds. We'll use ranged as an example, but the same setup can be applied to magic or melee, just substituting in the respective abilities. Put very simply, the highest damage part of our rotation happens when our damage boosting ultimate is active, and the weakest part of our ultimate is right after we use it, when we've just spent all of our adrenaline and we aren't able to use thresholds yet. That's where buffs like the Vigor and the Conservation of Energy or Heightened Senses Archaeology Relics come in. These effects leave us with some extra adrenaline after we use an ultimate. Having some extra adrenaline after we use our ultimates allows us to fire off those threshold abilities several abilities earlier, helping us capitalize on the time we spent in our ultimate. Couple these with the Adrenaline Potion or the Limitless ability, and we can begin using thresholds again within just a few seconds of activating our ultimate. See how short that early damage trough becomes with this? Also notice that when we added these things to our rotation, something else becomes available at the end of our ultimate. Our 20-second cooldown thresholds have started to come off cooldown again. And this is huge because it means we get a second round of those thresholds during our ultimate rotation. That's the true value of early adrenaline, because it means the majority of our thresholds will be activated during our ultimate. The last thing to bring up with this is the planted feet perk. Planted feet is a switch, and I know that's a dirty word for a lot of people, but it's also the single most powerful invention perk in the right hands. If active when we use Sunshine or Death's Swiftness, it extends our ultimate by 8 seconds. On its own, that doesn't sound huge. But again, the true value is in extending that threshold window, usually allowing us to use 2 to 3 additional thresholds under our ultimate, letting us dip into even a double round of those 30-second cooldown thresholds or special attacks. Using this as a framework, we should finish our ultimate with around 50% adrenaline, leaving us with 20 seconds to use a threshold or two while we build back adrenaline to be ready for our next ultimate. As always, remember these micro lessons are intentionally brief. There are so many versions of an ultimate rotation to fit your situation, and this is just an example of a commonly used rotation on a stationary attackable target. If you have any questions about specific situations or other adrenaline management tools, feel free to leave them in the comments below. If you liked the video, leave it a like, and if you want to see more content like this, hit that subscribe button.
Questions, comments? I mean, you wrote the thing, so I'm mainly directing that at you, Tanis.
No, I thought it was really informative. I get it, even though I'm definitely a beginner, and I don't even know if you could call me that. Yeah, no, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and I think my biggest realization for this is that the Ring of Vigor was there, and it was always there as a switch. 50,000 Dungeoneering credits, which is relatively cheap, but I never had this, and I did some playing around with it after we did the micro lesson and got the reward, combined it with Conservation of Energy, as you wrote in your micro lesson, and it's actually really noticeable. Anything you want to expand on or carry on with, Thaxi?
Kind words, Dennis. But yeah, I mean, it's a relatively large buff, and it really does make a huge difference to get that second round of thresholds off, right? Because those carry so much of our damage rotation. And just like on, just as you know, to note on the change itself, like I think this is a very, I like this change because I think it's well calculated across different levels of play. You know, the people at the very high end get one extra inventory slot to, like, bring some food or an adrenaline urn or something. But it doesn't necessarily, like, it doesn't add to power creep necessarily. But the people in the kind of the middle tier that are doing, you know, ultimate rotations and manually activating thresholds, those kind of things, those kind of combat people, people in that combat bracket are, you know, they'll benefit a lot from this, I think. You know, if you can use it correctly, implementing it right makes an incredible difference in your rotation.
Yeah, it did. It did. I really felt
and,
it.
You know, even for folks that are you know, full revolution, especially since it's now not a switch, they'll probably, even people on revolution might get one extra snapshot or wild magic if they've got their bars set up right. Hey, we've got a micro lesson on that too, if you're interested. But you know, that's with those kind of well set up bars that have those thresholds early on a bar for even revolution, you'll get good use out of this, being even just a passive. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. I think it does a good thing to kind of make combat feel smoother for people in middle and lower tiers without adding a bunch of power creep at the high end of things. And I do like that. It also kind of removes some of those switches, which annoy the crap out of a lot of people and just makes life a little more simple, straightforward for people. So,
yeah. And you did bring up the Planet Feet switch as well, as something that you can work into this if you want to, you know, replace one switch for another. But I mean, hey, maybe you're just adding that in for the first time if these are new to you. But
I mean, if you're using a Ring of Vigor, I think you were probably using a Planted Feet before. But maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe. And it's going to be really interesting because we're recording this before this has the micro lesson has gone fully live. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is to this just from the ultimate rotation side of it, because Ring of Vigor on its own is interesting, but the wider topic is, of course, those ultimate rotations. And I think the thing that struck me the most with the micro lesson was that we were there discussing Ring of Vigor, but at the same time, it just flowed so nicely into ultimate rotations. And then once you get that idea of ultimate rotations in your head, you see all these different spots where Ring of Vigor would make sense. So,
and I'll openly admit that I kind of glossed over the second half of the Ring of Vigor effect, which is that 10% decreased cost on special attacks and Essence of Finality attacks. We will be mentioning that, I think, in one of our upcoming micro lessons. I think that fits nicely in a slightly separate topic.
Yep.
But attaching them both together didn't seem incredibly necessary. So
yeah, and you know, the micro lessons say that if you have any questions about any of the things that we mention in the micro lesson, if it's something like a piece of equipment, wiki. If it's a question of how you might apply this to your case, comments, Discord, rsbmb.com/discord.
Yeah. I mean, for my piece, I didn't normally bother to equip my Ring of Vigor to save 3% adrenaline when I used like an SGB out of, you know, special. So, you know, this will be a small buff for people that were not being really sweaty with their rotations. But, you know, yeah, from that second part of things. But
yeah, it makes sense.
I will say too, you mentioned it before the micro lesson, but I just want to do another shout out that I love that the lore team has just kind of made Vicky our go-to like science boy. He is the sad dragonkin of science boy now, and I'm here for it. I'm just really here for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a wonderful character. Shout out to our boy Vicky, chilling in the effigy incubator.
Hey, maybe Jagex can get a show going on, and we can have Vicky the science guy.
Vicky the science dragonkin, thank you very much.
Or that, yeah, that would work too.
But yeah, no. Oh yeah, I found this lying around in my lab. Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. Anything else from either of you on Vigor and the micro lesson before we move on?
I'm good.
All right. I'm going to take that as a cue to go on then from this and get to the rest of the patch notes with this. Necklace of Salamency. They added these effects to it this week. Apparently you could just get it in as it was a transmog before this.
No, it was available in the Grand Exchange, but it was not obtainable.
Okay, fair enough.
For a year now. It was a year and 4 days since they added it to the GE. Don't ask me why.
Interesting. Fair enough. A bank chest and additional NPCs have also been added to the Dream of Aya environment. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you can actually talk with community members and such when you're there. But additional NPCs they're talking about with this is, of course, the Hot Tub Dragonkin.
Hot Tub Boy Dragonkin?
Sorry, not Dragonkin. Dragon Rider.
Yeah, Dragon Rider. Close enough.
Yeah, I meant to.
You're the junk guy. There we go.
The guy who was there.
Hot tub boy.
Just waiting for the world to end.
He's just man's full chill, which is interesting because didn't he say he wasn't? I'm not going to question.
I don't know.
Hot tub boy exists. That's all that matters.
And in reality, that's what that patch note served to say, because that's the NPC. Everybody's probably gonna go and see what that.
Yeah. I don't remember if they added anybody else there.
No, but he's the most important, obviously.
It's true. And they did tell us this week too how we get some of the Passkeeper stories. I don't know if we mentioned that, but I don't think it's in the patch notes.
No, we didn't mention that, and I guess now's a good time to do that. The story changes the more you skill, and it's just a progression. With the more you skill there, eventually the story will unlock. And the dialogue for each of the NPCs at the skilling stations will change based on how much you've skilled. And it happens over time, we're led to believe. Though I don't know if anybody in Clan Quest has got one yet. So
I don't think anybody's gotten a full story. Again, public chat while I was there, apparently a couple people got changes to the dialogue from them. The way that this was kind of understood to me is that each XP drop you get has a chance to award story progress, and each story progress will change, or I don't know how, I mean, maybe a set of story dialogues? I don't know. At some point during your story progress, the dialogue will change for the NPC at the appropriate skilling station.
Yeah.
Which all of mine still say the same thing, and I didn't talk to them during the set, but after doing now 150,000 XP at each station, they all have the exact same dialogue, and I don't know if it's the base dialogue or not. I should look at the wiki to see if the transcript page probably. But
yeah.
Yeah, so worry, small worry about how long that's going to take, but we'll see.
There's also, we don't know what the number is on this, but training there over time unlocks the Amber Haze and Aya Surface skyboxes.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. We needed some more like nice, vibrant, warm skyboxes that weren't aggressive.
I'm wondering how this one will work for you, Tanis, because it's like imagine you turn night shift or something on your device. That's kind of what it does to the RuneScape game.
Who knows? Because I don't know how I feel about having that. See, if it's really helpful, then that would be a bummer.
Yeah.
That it blocks behind everything.
And locked behind who knows how much skilling.
It seems very similar to the Menaphos skybox that is available to everyone to me. The difference being that the Menaphos skybox has a very small fog distance set on it naturally. So you actually have your field of view is much shorter if you are on a smaller draw distance. So your draw distance, the way that the fog distance works in the game, if you're on a small, the fog comes a certain distance away from whatever your draw distance is. And so if your draw distance is set to max, you're in a really good computer, you can see very far. But if your draw distance is set to minimum and there's a big fog thing, you actually get a very small section of the world that you can see through the fog. The fog actually obscures a ton of the world. So I actually don't use the Menaphos one because I play on a potato. but it's a nice vibrant skybox, and the Menaphos and the Aya ones seem similar to that to me, just with a much lower fog distance on them.
I think that's going to be something people are going to go for as well. So who knows where that is going to be. I've been doing Aya daily because I at this point it's something for me to do, and I want to unlock the stories, but I also want to see where we're going to get to, or rather when I'm going to get the skyboxes as well. So we'll keep everybody in the loop on that about when that arrives. So
hopefully, fingers crossed for me, that it's like 1 million total XP.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting.
That would be, I think I'm sitting at 900K right now.
Okay, so you should know in a little while then.
Within a day or two, yeah, I would.
Okay. Moving on, fixed an issue where the player could get soft locked after dying during phase 3 of the Saren boss fight.
Oops.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what they mean soft locked. I guess unable to progress the quest.
Yeah, unable to progress either the quest or unable to leave the location where you're currently at. So,
fair enough.
Cool.
Dialogue between the player and Azanandra on the Glacier front will no longer be interrupted by the Glacites. Yeah. NPCs have been removed from the Elder Halls at the state where the player finishes the Erebus puzzle. Mm-hmm. Cannon fire sound effects are no longer present once the war in Sentistan has concluded. And they say, the coast is clear, folks.
Yeah, very briefly at the end of the quest. I wonder if that stays. Have you been back to check if that's...
No, I haven't. I haven't.
Because I know that I think they're probably going to do the same thing that they did with God Wars 1 and 2, where they're like, this is the frozen state of the war.
Right.
That you step then, a out of time when you enter the dungeon.
Yeah. Then by that logic, you'd probably still be able to hear it.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm imagining, is that you're still going to be able to hear it. But
yeah. Players are no longer guaranteed to receive a construction strange rock when interacting with the stonemason after completing extinction, and there were various typo fixes as well this week with it. So cool. That's the extinction patch note. Favorites, Tanis?
Even though I don't use it, I have it, and I have to say the Ring of Vigor is the biggest. I mean, that's the patch of the week,
that's
right?
That's the combat one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a big fan of the changes they made to the Shadow Ring.
Okay.
I think the teleport to Aya, again, because it is now a weekly, having a teleport to go directly there is really nice.
It's also a teleport directly to your effigy incubator monthly if you haven't finished that yet.
Mm-hmm. And just a good, like, just general, the skilling updates are nice.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
And
I mean, obviously also the Aya stuff is now useful.
Yeah, that's going to be mine, the Aya stuff. And really gets me thinking if I want to limit the ult to being just a skill peer. But we'll see. We'll see.
I have a strong feeling that if you ever decide to unskill purity, it will be for the sake of a quest or, a number of quests.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Exactly. Because, one thing I've always wanted to do is I've always wanted to, just take a weekend and play through the entire Plague series in one weekend.
I mean, it's a lot of Underground Pass, Shane. And I love Underground Pass, but that's a lot of Underground Pass.
That's a lot of mornings there in turn.
I mean, the light puzzle's not bad if you read a guide.
That's true.
Gasp. Gasp. Actually, even without a guide, because we don't take damage from the shadows anymore, and agility training is now...
When did they change that?
Oh, they didn't. But Shane, we're not wearing tier 60 armor when we go through there anymore. You're wearing, the way that evolution of combat works, those shadows have gotten a lot... They don't do a lot of damage when they do hit you, and they don't hit you very often anymore.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
You can completely ignore them with an Excalibur, so.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. We're going to move on and we're going to talk about Mod Keeper. We're going to find out if he's a keeper. And I bet that's the pun they were wanting us to make.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was the full intent of this man's name. There's nothing else that he could potentially be keeping at all.
But before we do that, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because without you guys, we wouldn't be doing and looking at all the fun things that we've been looking at in the past week to 10 days or so. More on that in a few days once things start rolling on that. But this week in particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Skiotan, Scott D.S., Seth W., Stabiv, Tabby, Taylor B., The Naked Captain, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for making this episode and RSBNB update possible. If you want to get your name read out, or if you want to contribute to the podcast, all you need to do is head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB there, starting for as little as $1 a month. You get access to, first of all, our entire back catalog of monthly bits, our bonus shows. We got one that we're recording next week on Legacy Combat that you guys voted for heavily. David and I have started production on that, so that's going to be a very, very interesting one to look at. But if you want to go one step further, for $3 a month, you'll get a special blue VIP rank on the RSBNB Discord server, including, this was newly added for the start of the upcoming month, chat channel access and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. Now, of course, we also do have the insider tier for $5 a month, where you'll get a shout out on the podcast each and every week. And you'll also gain access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, in addition to everything else. And of course, as we mentioned, where we're going to land with this, anybody who has submitted their Patreon info already will be getting a special mail out reward in May from us. It's quite the thing. I'm not going to say anything else, because if I do, I'll wind up spoiling it, but we want it to be a nice surprise for everybody. And this is our big thank you for everybody who has got us to this point so far. And I guess at this point, all that's left is the Hot Ones Challenge. If and ever we reach 500. And last week when Earth was on the show, he volunteered to be the moderator of that and asked the hot questions.
Oh, that would be spicy.
It would. And I think he did that to get out of having to have any of the spice stuff.
Smart man.
So, if you want to check us out, patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone. Yeah. All right. Mod Keeper, the new executive producer.
Yeah.
Tanis, early thoughts?
Because
we got a whole Q&A to go through. We're going to go through some of the questions, but early read.
My early thoughts was, you know, I'm glad we got to see the face behind the curtain. I think that if we were in a place where we needed someone to maintain the ship, then he's a keeper. But I don't look for big things.
Big substantial changes. He's not a mod warden in that we're going to be modernizing everything in terms of just making the game grow up, right?
No, he seems to be acutely aware that when it comes to the RuneScape community, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah.
And this is why we can't have nice things. So thanks, everybody. I hope you like what we have, because we're going to have it for a while.
And the path
no
we're
one
going
can
on.
Make any bold moves, because they can't.
Yeah. Thaxi, early read?
I got a fairly similar read. I mean, he definitely, like, when he made comments, it was definitely, everything was vague. And it was definitely kind of like, there were changes that it sounded like he wanted to be made on the engine side of things to kind of modernize and streamline that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also, you know, just he very much had his responses to me very much set the stage of like trying to keep his head down and just support the staff and support the game and just kind of let the dev cycle just keep running, you know, and kind of just give them the tools they need to succeed. Yeah. And he didn't seem to have, there wasn't anything that he struck me as having, any statements on a strong vision or a strong goal or a strong,
there was no
like,
grand,
this is
huge
my
grand vision.
Mm-hmm. There was no real big platform. It was just, I'm here to support the team and we're just going to keep making your game.
Steady as she goes.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you're going to need
that. Sometimes
you
need that. Sometimes you need that. We're going to dive into the Q&A with this here and then we'll talk about what was revealed.
Hold on, Shane.
What?
I said, hold on, Shane.
Okay.
We need you in this moment. Only Shane can do this. Uh-oh. We need a Star Trek captain analogy.
Oh. That's a
right?
hard one.
I know. I'm kind of stumped too. That's why I had to see if you knew it.
See, Warden was easy. He was Captain Pike.
Yeah, 100%. How about Syru? Maybe?
Yes.
Suru?
Yes, yes, yes. In the terms of just, you know, being that kind of person who's going to let the crew just keep doing what they're doing and handling any kind of unforeseen circumstances that come up if the world throws them or the time throws them at something different, when in reality, in the past, you might have had a different role. That's actually a pretty good one. Tanis, now that I think about it.
Right on. It felt like it was needed. We haven't had enough Star Trek references lately.
I'm just glad you didn't say Cisco, because if you would have said Cisco, then that would have been an entirely different leadership that we would have been in for then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's a complicated guy.
He is. In any case, diving into the live stream, they did confirm with this week that Mod Jack is now lead designer for RuneScape, taking over the position that Mod Osborne held.
Cool.
This gives me a boatload of confidence, given what we know about Mod Jack and how he will tell us what we don't want to hear, but do what needs to be done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's wonderful. I liked hearing that. But a bit about Mod Keeper's history. He's been at Jagex for about 2.5 years. Started off as an executive producer, leading some technical outsourcing projects. Was with the old school team as a lead producer, which he called an internship. And has been on RS3 for 6 months. Before this, he's got 30-plus years in the games industry. Started playing games on a Commodore 64. He's Dutch and he's from the Netherlands. He also said that the one thing he likes about RS is its uniqueness, that as a 20-year-old game, it's not like anything else out there, and it makes it very special. And the thing that he dislikes most about RuneScape is some of the confusing bits, and he specifically highlighted the combat system.
He did. And I messaged you as he said that we need to send him a pack of micro lessons.
We should. That's actually...
Fairly tongue-in-cheek. I don't know that we could actually do this.
No, but I mean, generally, right? But I found that interesting because it makes me wonder how many other new players to the game are in that same boat.
Well, and I will say, too, and we don't talk about this very often, but the combat system is not welcoming to new players because you do not have abilities unlocked. So you can't actually build a high-level rotation before you get to relatively endgame content. You just don't have enough abilities to run a full-time rotation. So, especially if he has been, you know, busy doing executive producer things, and, like, I believe he's been playing the game. He said he has, and, you know, those kind of things. But I would be unsurprised if he was still... what we would consider a relatively new account.
Yeah. And that's fine. And executives don't need to, you know, have that huge presence in game like some of our JMods do, right?
He's not involved in the design stuff. He's just kind of, he's involved in leading the team and the ship, right? He's the producer. He is the one that kind of coordinates things. And then the team actually makes the decision to makes it happen. Yeah. So I'm totally fine with that.
That's what he said. His main goal is to ensure the team can do their best work. And this is where my ears started to perk up, and I want to get your thoughts on this quote, Tanis. He said, "There are some times where there are decision-making moments, but I would love to leave that most to the team as possible, because the team is more, in essence, they have the experience, they have the knowledge on specific craft areas, so they should make the decisions." That caught my ear, because that's interesting.
That was reminiscent of what even what Mod Warden kind of said about having all these captains, right?
And
you trust your captains, and you're kind of the admiral. That was good. Well, I'm sure this is coming up. I don't want to step on it.
No, go for it.
Well, I was just going to say that the one thing that gave me confidence was the way that he seemed to understand how to take in player feedback, but not with mob rule.
Right.
Seemed to have a good balance with that. And I was like, thank goodness. Because it was a little... I wasn't sure which way that was going to go.
And every question about something player-facing that came up was effectively, let's defer to the community and see which way it needs to go. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Well, but he was very specific to say, you know, we don't need to do polls all the time.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be like OS. Mm-hmm. It was enough to me to be like, okay, so he knows that there are all kinds of lightning rod issues, but as much as he can find a singular opinion that everyone has, then he would let that be influencing on the development.
Yes.
He's doing the good parent thing, right? I mean, it's the best way to take care of your young child. I'm sure you're familiar with this one, Dennis. It's just like, okay, we don't tell them, do you want to do this or not? It's tell them, do you want to do it this way or do you want to do it that way? You give them fake choices. I sincerely hope that he'll give us options about how things, but like, we're going to talk about the roadmap. I think some of those roadmap issues are going to be contentious. And the fact that they're happening, they're going to give some control back to us by saying, how do you want this to be done? It's happening. How do you want it to be done? And I do like that a lot. That's the impression that I got.
Okay, that's good. He also said that his goal is to bring RuneScape into the next 20 years. What does the next 20 years of RS look like? Which, to me, is very much a continuation of where we were at when Mod Warden was finishing up.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that. He also touched on his strategic pillars, specifically the first one being content cadence and how content is built and designed and what type of content is being released. Like, is there enough quests? Is there enough skilling updates? Is there enough PVM? Which I think over the last 12 months, we know there's been more than enough PVM.
True.
The question that brought this drove me crazy.
I know.
I almost texted you when I heard it. I was like,
and there's a reason I paraphrase the questions or just leave them out and summarize the point that was made.
Sorry for bringing it up, but it drove me.
I know.
Nutty.
I know. I know. I know. But with that, other pillars include the advent of sustainable live ops. Making it sustainable means how many events per year, how many promotions, what could get sold. And that's, once again, addressing those kind of issues head on, which
right.
I think people are going to want to have a discussion about, given, you know, the fox ears that we just had at Easter, the green Santa hat that we had at Christmas and whatnot. Because it seems if this trend were to continue, we'd be having quarterly rares, right? So
right.
Thing
hey,
is, do you want
out.
That to continue? And how much stuff on the treasure hunter side is going to get sold in terms of lamps? Because we have a topic on that after with Treasure Hunter and Oddments. So,
well, now that they can make transmogs move, that's a gold mine.
Oh boy, would it be? Would it be?
Well, if they've already got a pre-boned model for them.
True. True.
Looking at Chocobies and Salamanders, you know?
Oh.
But, right.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I mean, yeah.
The issue, he said, that was dearest to his heart, smart working in terms of specifically how do you help the team get better at what they do? And the way this was highlighted as one of his core issues in that this is a very abstract concept for people who aren't aware of how the industry works, right? And I think the best way to get around this, and in particular how to show this kind of thing off, is to just have, you know, in effect, what could amount to, you know, a 2-minute quick video out of a JMod's day. Hey, here, we're doing a spot check with Mod Breezy. What are you currently working on? And why is this different than last year? What's changed? That kind of thing. That helping the team get better at those sorts of things, so to speak. From the, I guess, marketing and community side, that would be.
Yeah. It's hard because, I mean, they don't want to spoil the content. They're
you can't spoil content, like, but, I mean, as you get closer to something, you can kind of, you know, push
it
into the future.
For instance, we're getting roadmaps again. We know what updates are coming. We can,
yeah.
They can talk in very general terms about what they're working on without giving us. It's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And with that, connect more with the community. Talk more to the players. Hear what the hot topics are, what's not working, and what the community would love to see. Ah.
See, that's what I'm talking about. If the community overwhelmingly wants to see a particular thing, maybe it makes it up to the top of the list. But
is there anybody in the community who can articulate that besides us?
There are several people that are working on it, community-wise.
Okay. And the reason I say that is because typically what this has involved was in the worst case, riots on World 66, and in the common day-to-day, inflammatory Reddit posts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, we need to be 100% honest, is that you can ask anybody, from a whole wide range of spectrums, how is the community management side of the game working? And you'll get a myriad answers from, yeah, I'm relatively happy to know the community management team is doing absolutely nothing on the absolute far end of it. And because of that, it's how do you get this out forward? And in many ways, this is more of a CM question than an EP question, believe it or not. So I think Modhuli and team is going to have their work cut out for them on this. So,
I mean,
that's a huge asterisk with that.
And I think that it sounds like there's some solutions being put in place where there are like major faces of the community who are being asked to help garner some of that feedback, in addition to, you know, people who play the game all the time.
Oh, like the PAGs?
To have a finger on pulse.
Oh, like the PAGs?
Kind of. And I believe the RSKA is one of the people that they're working with to do this.
I thought his was just an interview show more than interacting with the community kind of thing.
They've got some other stuff in the wings. Okay. So, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong.
I mean, I hate to say it, but I think Huli needs a Shawnee.
A community champion, someone that the community loves.
Someone that the community connects with.
Okay.
Most importantly, just that connection. And I'm not saying that it's from like a lack of trying or this or that. There's just something special about him.
Yeah.
And there's been certain J mods like that.
You remember how long it took Mod Porky to fill that role?
Yeah, and even before before Shawnee, I think, you know, people felt kind of a connection to Mod Lee.
Yeah.
Needs one of those that can help him. You know what I mean?
I think they do want to go that way. It's just a question of how they get there at the end, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, if that results in more community connection, then that's ultimately a good thing because, like I said, you're going to get a full spectrum of answers from absolute horrible to, you know, hey, we're doing just fine. So there's a bit of a departure in questions from the EP now towards a question about clans and the clan system going forward. Modkeeper said that with this, he's actually a fairly avid World of Warcraft player, and he's in one of the top guilds there, so he totally understands the importance that clans have. The question was then sent over to Mod Jack, who says that the clan updates have focused so far on bonuses for being in a clan, but he'd like to see future clan updates be focused on the social tools, giving clan leaders the tools and access that they need to manage the clan better. Which makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we don't need any more incentives. Like, clans have consolidated enough. Giving the tool, like, social tools and stuff. Yeah, that would be, you know, think about it, Shane. How much stuff does Clan Quest kind of do on the side because it's just not, you don't have the infrastructure to be able to do it in game?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, permission management being more granular, that's something we could all jump up and down about.
So many permissions, though.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And, you know, just the way they tie into engine and whatnot. And in fact, these updates are for such a small amount of people. That's where you get to the business idea of why it's been so long since we've had a wholesome clan update. So,
which is weird because I don't think, I mean, how many 500-person clans? I mean, there's a lot.
I don't know.
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
The thing is, too, that, like, how many people, you know, tie a lot of their enjoyment of the game to their clan and their clan events, right? And, you know, there's plenty of people that play the game for the game's sake or to be very idle and, you know, different players, different styles. But I think there are a lot of people that, you know, especially clan leaders are among them, but even clan members in terms of they enjoy the people they play the game with, and that's what keeps them coming back, is that they've got events coming up, they've got things on their schedule. And so, you know, I love the clan notice board, but it's janky as all get out. And, you know, that's one of those things that could use some a lick of paint.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, that event you scheduled, or you found scheduled for 2025 is still there.
That wasn't me. I think that was actually Reed.
Oh, okay. All right.
I believe
enough.
Reed scheduled that in 2019 when the notice board first came out. it was him, or it was, I think it was him that,
someone crazy.
Yeah. It's visible for people that don't know what we're talking about. They're on the Clan Quest Clan notice board. There has been for many years now, an event coming up in 2025. It was at the time, the latest date you could schedule an event for, where it was, the event was specifically, it's visible to everybody, but it's designed for anybody who is clan. Like, it was like admins, all of the clan, like leadership was going to meet in the fight pit. We were going to, you know, have a post-apocalyptic end of days, you know, good old battle to the death, I believe was the plan. It gives me a good chuckle every time
I
see it.
Yeah, it does. It
Shout out to the clan notice board for that one.
Maybe we just need more mini games that are active in a system to jump into mini games easier. A queue system.
Honestly, I would love it if they. Yeah, if honestly, most mini games probably just should be put on a shard world at this point.
Yeah. Because like that's the easiest thing about Star Trek Online. You press a button and you're into any queue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, travel like traveling to the Void Knight Island should take you to an instance the same way that traveling to, you know, Heist or not Heist. Oh, actually, maybe Heist, but like Flash Powder Factory, or there's a handful of them, right? That are all they all take you off off to an instance world. I think the Games Room has an instance world option too. You know, a bunch of those. So I think if they did that with the rest of them, just made an FTP instance and a P2P instance, that we'd be. Maybe they'd come back. I'm not overly hopeful, but it would be nice.
Yeah. Next question was, is there any chance that prices of certain items could be updated on the GE to the real prices? It had to be done manually, and Timbo was working that on the exact same day that this live stream happened, and this is why in Timbo we trust.
Mm-hmm.
I love that conversation. If you didn't hear this in the live stream, it's worth going back and listening to, because it sounded like They had this, like, everybody looked at the office and then did the Spider-Man meme where they all pointed to each other. And they're like, who? So, you know, I think it was, they said that Timbo had asked the question literally that morning or somebody had asked, who has the power to update the GE prices? And they all, like, Jack looked at Timbo and said, you do. And Timbo said, oh, I have some work to do. and went off and took the morning to comb through the numbers and fix. And he posted during the live stream. If you go to his Twitter, you'll find it near the top. A very long list of items that he updated the price for. He said everything that the average trade value over the last whatever X number of days was more than 10 million coins off of what the actual GE price was. He updated the price for. And some of them still seem a little bit off to me, but they're definitely better. So.
Woo! Yeah. So we got things like Crypt Bloom, the Cloak of Seasons, Diamond Cane, Elite Serenic pieces, Grass and Rune pouches, Trim Masterwork
items. More regular updates on those, which, good.
Good. Important.
Regulation. Regulation. Woo!
Yeah. Well, everything below max cash is still fine. You guys had that discussion last week.
Yeah, we did.
So, you know.
That's a bigger problem that was actually addressed in the Q&A in a bit. And, you know.
I love it, too. Look, Jack's like, we got solutions.
They said exactly
you ain't
what
like
we said.
We got to fix this tomorrow.
We went on that. So, okay, we'll get to that. That was hilarious. But what's your stance on announcing upcoming content? They asked Modkeeper, and he said it's important to connect with the players. And there's that term again, connect with the players, to not just do Q&As, but maybe do a bit more behind the scenes on what's being worked on and where the game is going.
I mean, we've been saying it. Give us something to be excited about. You don't need to give us a ton of details. You just tell us this thing is coming and you should want it. And good job.
Yeah. Throw a little bit of red meat to the base. Yeah. So that then spiraled into a question: can you bring back the TAPS sessions Thursday afternoon? Personal projects. He said this is a powerful mechanic for the players and for the dev team, because they can work on something that they obviously like. And a few weeks ago, they actually had their own game jam internally that wasn't publicized, that revolved around designing content to bring back lapsed players.
Nice.
Which is interesting that they would target that crowd.
I wonder if that's where the retro cosmetic poll came from.
Maybe it did.
I wonder if that spawned that.
Maybe it
did. Speaking of which, there's a poll in game, folks. Go vote. It's in your community tab. Go do it. It's live now.
It'll be done by the time they're hearing this.
Just kidding. It's been live. I hope you voted.
And you were talking about this last night, actually.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of maybe using some of the older cosmetics, like the whip and the scimitar and the golden armor, to bring back people who might have been more comfortable with old school.
Well, I think that's one of those that even if people have only played old school, if they've not tried RuneScape 3 because the combat system is intimidating and the game is distinctly, you know, relatively different despite the story being somewhat similar, I think, you know, like some of the items they're bringing back are very much, you know, the scimitar is like people use that as their mouse on old school sometimes, you know, like these are relatively iconic items that carry some value and are like, that's endgame. That's what you want to look like. That's the height of cool.
Yeah, exactly.
And so having those available for RS3, I think is a good thing. And I do like that they're bringing a handful of those back. So
Yeah,
with that in mind, I did vote for the 2005 versions of all of those, because those feel like the most classic versions of them to me. If I was going to buy them, that's the one I would want. Mm-hmm. And also, again, because it's those old school players.
Yeah. Also, he was asked about his stance on investing in quests or reprioritizing quest content, which I got to talk about that being part of Clan Quest. And he said he wants to look at the data and determine if quests are too long or too short. But they definitely won't be going to, you know, vanilla fetch quests like other MMOs have.
Right. He's a WoW player.
Which makes sense.
He understands.
Mm-hmm. And he understands that RS quests need to be different.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see what comes out of that. I'll trust them to make the right decisions.
See, we feel this way. From the Clan Quest side, that the quests in particular that we've had in the last year or so were the right length. I personally felt the only quest I felt was too long was Endgame. But I want to bring you in on this, Tanis, quest length.
Yeah, they were all too long. All the ones I've done lately.
I'm actually with Tanis on this one.
Okay.
I'm with Tanis on this one. I think many of those quests could actually be very straight up split in half. And you know, you could keep the same volume of quests. I like the content, but if you're not a person that plays, a lot of them have been very long. If you're a person that doesn't play the game for very many hours a week, that's a big
time actually.
Or if you have any challenge whatsoever, it takes a very long time. You have to really want it, and then a lot of times you get to the end and it's
Well, I think they've done an excellent job with content recently where they've mixed the combat and the puzzles, and like they've done a good mix of content each quest. And I appreciate that because quests are so few and far between, it seems. But, you know, quests in the past were like, you had quests that were very straight puzzle quests. You had quests that were very much, you know, there's some story here, but this is a combat-focused quest. And these are very much more kind of, we're telling a grander story and we're generalizing and we're putting all the pieces together, right? There were some puzzles, you know, there were some easier puzzles in the Elder God Wars areas. There were some harder puzzles in other areas without spoiling anything. There was some easier combat and some harder combat. Like, they had a great mix in Extinction of all these things, but I wouldn't be opposed to them not having, you know, a boss as such at the end of every quest and not having, you know, having truly shorter and more frequent quests, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's something that is doable and would make it maybe more palatable to, because there are a lot of the community, like,
it takes a long time. And that kind of leans back on that old school quest idea. of how quests were back in the day.
Well, even old school kind of has a similar thing where quest takes so long to complete that if there's not a real highlight, if you can't kind of just snap one out every once in a while, that like people aren't going to be big fans all
Very
the time,
true.
Right?
Very true.
So I don't know.
And he said they're going to do this based on the data.
Right.
So the amount of people who start a quest and don't complete it will factor all that in. So.
Or that completed in multiple sessions over how long a period of time. And, you know, I'm sure they have all that.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Hmm. Current allocation of resources related to the presentation of the game. And this was a way of asking about the player rework, graphical updates, cutscenes versus pre-rendered videos like the graphic cutscenes we have.
Yeah.
He said it'll be a balance between new and old. Over time, there'll be things that should be updated. And it's going to be finding the right balance of updating things, whether or not the update needs it, and whether or not the updates would upset portions of the player base.
That told me everything I needed to know right there. When he said that, I'm like, well, you might be in on RuneScape for 6 months, but you know us.
And the player avatar rework hasn't been shelved. It's very much still in the works.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of steps to take before we're ready to implement it. Great way to put the fact that it's shelved. It's not currently something we're working on, but it's something we want to do. Great, cool.
But we need all kinds of tech updates to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that is one of the things that he did relatively consistently say, and maybe that's because he's been working in that part for at least old school, is that, you know, he's aware of the tech updates that need to happen, and they are putting some amount of resources into those, which, cool. We'll see what that looks like.
And there's a question on this, not next, but the one immediately after this. Will there be any emphasis on something like RuneScape 4 or moving to a more current game engine? And seeing what's happening with behind the scenes, he said, and what's being worked on, it looks as though things are being transitioned to RuneScape 4 from a technical perspective. But if that ever leads to a RuneScape 4 that is actually RuneScape 4, everybody will just have to wait and see on that. So what that means when you peel back the layers of it is that, let's just say, the top presentation of the content in-game, how it looks, is all going to stay the same. But everything that runs underneath is going to be receiving a massive facelift.
Yeah, I'm not sure what color pill it was that we took, but we've been in RuneScape 4, apparently. Like, this is RuneScape 4. We just didn't know it.
Yeah.
Blue pill?
That's a good way of putting it.
Yep.
And then, obviously, the next question came from the spring fair that we recently had. Does the executive producer feel that holiday events are in a place where they should be today? And this was, once again, the question where you defer to the players. Some people love holiday events and some people skip them. I want to talk more to the players.
If you guys can make up your mind, we could do something for you.
What the need is behind them. Maybe we need more, maybe we need less.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're all schizophrenic and we don't know what the hell to do.
Well, that's, I mean, the question specifically, when it was asked, specifically mentioned like old school, right? Do we want to have things like old school? And he very much said, well, some people don't interface with them. And that's can be a hefty amount of dev time. So, you know, people say they want them, but if we don't have heavy community interaction, they just won't get made. It's kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough. You know?
Yeah.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Yeah, me too. Then comes the question of polls or power to the players. He said, being more open to the community is the first step, and receiving feedback is also the first step. Polling can be a tool to use, but they probably don't want to go towards an old school method of polling. They might be using it here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Woo!
Basically,
did you feel the same way, Tanis?
Yeah, I was glad about that because they specifically mentioned power to the players, and I'm like, not do that again.
How familiar are you guys with the old school polling kind of results and I mean, not just the system, but how they usually go?
I mean, vaguely, I've heard that everything is polled, and I've heard that it
Everything.
But old school people love it.
I know they got some of the elves, but Warden got torpedoed.
So there's a few things that are issues with that system. I mean, the obvious thing is, like, sometimes they do just do updates, right? There's, like, if there's a quality of life update that must happen, they'll just do it without pulling it. But they pull pretty much all of the content that goes into the game, including, like, the balancing on and everything. And there's, like, there's some stuff that just, you know, will pass because it's cool, it's whatever. But, like, the community there also, like, it's very much asking for permission. And I don't want the RuneScape 3 team to start asking us for permission to do things and then requiring 3/4 of us to say, yes, we want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, again, I'm still salty, frankly, about bring back the wilderness vote. The referendum, the whatever the heck the thing was that they did, because there wasn't an opt-out button. You couldn't see what was, like, the other side of the web page without clicking the button that says, yeah, I think we should do it. And there was, like, they let it run for an incredibly long period of time. There was no, I don't want this. It was only a yes or don't say anything.
Yeah, and I think that one was decided that it was going to come back. Regardless,
that was the thing. Like, that wasn't a real choice.
No,
and so, I mean, maybe that's a bad example. But, like, here we are again, and it. We'll talk about the roadmap, wilderness changes.
Yeah.
But I mean, the issue with the old school, like the old school changes, almost every change they pull to do with their wilderness gets denied. Because there are enough people that don't want to deal with the wilderness because they find the wilderness annoying, because they find the PKers and the getting ganked like that just unfun. And so enough people say that they wouldn't play content that no recent changes at all have passed their update for the wilderness, with their PvP side.
Yeah, don't they have one going on with that right now that was controversial, I think?
Probably. I mean,
there's always something. They added loot keys recently. Which, like, so you don't have to loot because people were being attacked while they were looting after fight. Like, they added a PJ timer recently where you can't be attacked by another player while you've recently been in combat and mobs can't.
Haven't heard bring that you term out of for PvP. Years.
Player jacking, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, PvP quality of life stuff kind of sometimes goes through like that, but the majority of, like, do you want content in PvP areas, people just hard veto because there's. They require a set number of people to want something to pass
yeah.
it.
And I
feel that way too, though, on our side.
True.
Because it's a waste of resources for what, two people?
And
well,
I want to say.
We don't have as much of a PvP scene as they do, too, to be fair.
And I want to say there's part of me that would like to say, let's try this for 6 months. Let's try this for 6 headlines and see how it goes.
Well, and maybe that's what will happen. I mean, they've given us 6 months worth of headlines, right?
Yeah, I'd just like to see what would happen. Like, I don't think they should do it for story stuff, but other stuff, why not? Let's try it for a couple months.
They did, right? We've got relics of that system all over the game. There are pull boxes literally sitting outside of all the free-to-play banks still and other places. And... you know, the polling system still exists in game, even though, like, what is the, there's two polls in here. Choose your retro, choosing your retro skins 1 and 2 is up. Okay. For the longest time, there were, like, months old polls in here, right?
Just they were everything the, was closed.
But you never get notified either.
No. You used to get a notification in your chat box when you logged in. I don't know if they did that for these.
Oh. Well, you used to get, like, a big pop-up that said, hey, there's a poll going on.
That's true. And so, like, they did away with those pop-ups and they did away with a lot of the polling system because when it came down to it, they made the choices they felt were going to be good for the game and, you know, didn't always listen to us, which was, again, the correct decision, I think. But, like, there's a time and place for it. I'm interested to see how they go about gathering the feedback that they say they want. That's kind of where we're at, I guess.
Next up, they asked him about his favorite game of all time. It was Bubble Bobble. It was the first game he started playing. He'd play it through the night and looked out the window. It was light out. But before that, reading books and experiencing stories. And World of Warcraft is in his top 5 games.
Oh, of course.
Then Mod Hooli had to ask Mod Jack's favorite game, and Mod Jack's favorite game is Sid Meier's Colonization.
Sure.
So
there's
that.
Civ. Civilization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not Colonization.
Oh, whoops.
That's a different game.
Whoops. I guess I...
The queen would like her subjects back, please. Thank you.
That's Shane's favorite game.
Oh, I don't know about that. That's a whole other can of worms. But anyways,
Once had a colony nation in Europa Universalis IV. That was quite nice. Anyways, it was basically Sweden colonized modern day Georgia and Florida and South Carolina of the U.S.
Could they colonize us now? Because we could use some of their healthcare and education, stuff like that. Yeah, that'd be cool. Come invade us, Sweden.
The question was asked, there's a prevailing notion that RuneScape should have weekly or almost weekly content updates to like how it was in the past.
I wanted to paintbrush somebody.
Or are key monthly updates in Ninja Strikes likely going to be the model into the future? His answer was, once again, I'd love to do daily content updates, but there's a lot of work going into the updates. Mm-hmm. We want to get into a good spot where players can expect what's to come with maybe even bigger, quote, movie release styles of updates, and trying to get to that cadence and finding one that makes sense, and they'll be figuring this out in the next few months. And what was interesting, and I don't know if you read into this as well, Tanis, is that he would not be opposed to having a larger quarterly style update similar to how WoW might have it, because he said movie release updates every few months, but key updates every month. I don't know if you picked up on that.
No, I did. And it made perfect sense to me, but he might as well said, yeah,
we're going to try expansions again.
I wish unicorns could run on rainbows. Yes. I wish I could fix world hunger. I wish I could bring world peace, but it's player base happening.
We would lose people between those 3 months between when content dropped. I mean, that's kind of
like, let's be honest. Let's just look at everything that happened between Het's Oasis and Extinction. We got the Abyssal Slayer creatures, but everybody was feeling the stretch with that.
Mm-hmm. But that was a stretch. The way that I felt, what it sounded like to me was like Abyssal Slayer creatures, okay, Het's Oasis, those would have been what he was talking about with the TV shows, right? The monthly headliners.
Yeah.
Whereas the quarterly stuff would have been bigger. To me, that's more of a, well, it's not quite as big as a Menophos, but bigger than just Extinction. Like, if Extinction and Iowa was a... Iowa, wherever. The reward place. if it was a legit, like, skilling area, like that, then something like that size. And I don't think that's too bad. That's kind of what we get anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. I mean... Yeah.
But once again, keep the things as they are, mod keeper. That seems to be the sense in the way we're going here, is that right now, don't expect huge seismic changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At least that's what I read into all this. I don't know if you guys felt differently.
Oh, no, absolutely. Sure did.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Where does mod keeper see the most opportunity for growth within the team? He says RuneScape's obviously very successful since it's 20 years old, but that might also mean that there's not a lot that he necessarily needs to change. He says he brings a lot from outside. He could perhaps optimize things using outside experience and knowledge. And this is, once again, keeping things as they are, not seismic changes. He says won't be changing a lot, perhaps be a little bit smarter and maybe think a little bit differently. And maybe be a little bit bolder.
Did you think that was a weird question? I thought it was a really weird question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never heard something asked in that way.
You're not going to throw the team under the bus. You're never going to do that. So I don't know what the heck the point of that question was. But I think the answer spoke to what needed to be said. And we got something important out of it in that he said there's not a lot that I need to change. So that's, once again, keeping the path.
Yeah.
A bit smarter, maybe a bit bolder. So
I mean, From my perspective, we had some incredibly long and very inconsistent content droughts. And I think that that really was challenging for the game's player base.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think the first half of last year, with love to the anniversary celebrations, was not anything incredibly special. I think the same thing could be said for kind of like Rockship was released, but, you know, around. We kind of got our 120s for things, and then we got archaeology, and then there was a fairly long downtime where there wasn't a terribly large amount of new content to the game. And, you know, between the quests and the Elder God Wars kind of whole area, we've gotten quite a lot of new content this year. Even, like, and we know they're not huge, but they've made completely new environments and methods and things for 3 updates already this year. And it is the end of April, so it's been 4 months, but they've added in, you know, new environments. They've made, I'm not going to say, you know, wildly huge significant updates, but they've large content pieces for sure.
And that's the thing that people don't get, is that these aren't your updates from 2005 or 2006. These are updates right. that have a full team behind them, environment, audio, localization, QA, and the devs, whereas before, you didn't necessarily need new environments for all these updates, but what you just highlighted out is that point, where at this point, you just have to iterate a bit to maybe not necessarily change that much, but maybe, like you said, just be a little bit smarter and be a little bit bolder. So
they're, generally speaking, giving people a reason to be, you know, subscribed every month. They're every month to month and a half, at least so far at the start of this year, they've given us some piece of content that says, hey, here's your subscription money, here's what you're getting, in addition to all of the other things that are already in the game.
Yeah.
And you know, I think if they can keep up that cadence where they don't have multi-month droughts where, you know, they've got some patch notes, they've got some smaller updates, but where they're getting a release, a content release out once every month or two, I'm happy with the game in that state.
Yeah, because yeah, we were spoiled by the four fronts back to back to back last year.
Yeah, I mean, and that was clearly they put much. Time into it. Mm-hmm. Well, they had some making up to do. That's what I felt for that. Yeah. Is it like, okay, we got a full year worth of content in 4 months, and I'm okay with it. But yeah, at the start of last year, I was very much feeling very burnt out with the game. So
yeah. Tavis, yeah, any final thoughts on this one?
Well, I just want to say that's an important thing that Daxi brought up. And when I'm saying that, you know, I like the schedule and that's what we're getting anyway, you know, no, that doesn't take into account delays and content droughts and all that. I'm saying if all things were to remain as they are and as they are supposed to be, not having that happen, then that's perfectly fine. And the other thing, you know, I hate to bring this up, but right now it's the right balance for the price. I think if you want more, it would be more expensive. And we just had, you know, we just found out that the price is going to already go up. Right. So I think, you know, I feel like it is a good balance. You know, less would be not probably enough for me, but more I wouldn't want to pay for.
Right.
Okay, that's actually a really interesting way of looking at it. I appreciate that. Once again, there's more questions about community and such, in particular about how can you do more outside Q&As. He's called this a long journey that we will be going on. Those were his exact words. Might be blog posts, Discord Q&As, open and closed betas. Polling could also be a part of it, and if the world changes enough back to how it was, RuneFest.
Yeah.
There's still a chance someday.
Yeah.
Someday.
And from what I understand of it, it's a liability issue to the point where, you know, if somebody gets COVID at RuneFest and the worst happens, they don't necessarily have a way of dealing with that from a legal angle, as bad as that sounds.
RuneFest, USA, baby. We'll do it in Florida. They have no rules there. They don't give a shit. RuneFest, Florida. Let's go.
I always thought Vegas would be a better one in the U.S.
It would, but maybe. They even have a small, like, well, actually, no, everywhere. We're wide open. We are wide open, so... I'd be down with Vegas. I don't know if my wife would allow me to go to Vegas. I could probably get away with like St. Pete or Tampa.
I have not been to RuneFest and want to go at one point, but we'll see. You know, we'll see what the world ends up doing.
It's a long trip to London for us in the Northern Hemisphere to make for RuneFest. Let me just say that.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah. 8+ hours, 6'2", and in an economy seat is not fun. All right. Avatar refresh. We did that. Ah, yes. Here's a good one. Will RuneScape 3 ever be more transparent with things like the economy and death costs? And the player avatar refresh. He said the short answer is yes, winking towards the upcoming roadmap. And Mod Jack said that death costs are the highest priority right now for him, second to getting more content into the game. And with this inflation is the most significant question for the RS economy as a whole, which also attaches onto the rares and then the Grand Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
We were there last week. Listen to our nibble on that.
Yeah. Well, I thought this was very telling. And you know what I heard? You know what I heard when he was saying this? If they can tackle the death cost, then he can decouple some of the solutions he has for the inflation that everybody would piss and moan about. I feel like if you could decouple that, then maybe I don't know. I felt like he had a plan. He had
ideas. If dying cost less, getting less alkables and less gold drops from bosses would feel better. I mean, that's true.
Yeah. And he basically said what we said last week is that you do PVM, it adds gold to the game, that filters and in some cases people who are farming high level PVM pushes them into the rares market, which in turn manipulates the rares market, which feeds back on the rest of the economy. So it's that whole encompassed loop with that. And he said they did experiment with removing GP drops from combat, and one of these was stone spirits, and it was. Sorry, it was skilling drops being removed from bosses, and that was stone spirits. So he said that it didn't work out particularly well, but if it had have worked, they could have rolled that out and removed inflation that way.
Yeah, well, they could have removed them, right? Like, that wasn't something we needed. And that is why I feel like if he can fix them...
They had to give us something.
But they
don't
but
want
did
to
they?
Me and then get nothing. I mean... In effect, no, because stone spirits are not worth very much, but they, you know, they can't just leave empty spots on a boss drop table. So, you know, I mean, you could have just set it so that they, the boss gives you like 2K or whatever, and it would have been equivalent, but, you know, at least they gave these things a use.
Right, but you could if it wasn't costing you money, right? I mean, if there wasn't as much risk, then it would be like, well, then you're on the skiller level now, bud. Have fun. And skilling supplies would go up. It would make that viable. You wouldn't be paying every time you died. Like, it feels like there's a solution here, but we're all going to have a little bit of pain.
Yeah, and he said the reason inflation hasn't been fixed is that gold drops would need to be removed from bosses, and the trick is finding a way to make PVM rewarding, since there's the idea now that every kill should be money positive, and that leads to inflation.
Well, again, it comes down to, I think the game should reward you for the like attention you put into it, to like like, Krosis is an excellent example of, like, a skilling, right? It's not PVM necessarily, or Big Game Hunter that's, like, relatively high-value skilling methods, but they take a lot of attention to do, right? A lot of the skilling methods that, like, runecrafting. Runecrafting is another good example where, like, you have to put in very high effort, but you get fairly good profit out of it if you're doing it as a money-making method. I don't want skilling, I don't want PVMing and killing a lot of them. I mean, some bosses you might be able to get away with it, they're fairly okay, but I want them to be on the same level as some of the gathering skills, frankly, because I would feel bad about if my average drop, including rares, was in a similar vein to, like, harvesting elder logs at a mid to high tier boss. Yeah. Like, I would much rather spend my time at doing the elder logs, right? And it's
that's
some
true.
People want to pay more attention, some people want to pay less, but that's the idea, is that you pay more attention, you get more reward. And I know that doesn't sit well with everybody, but you know, that's a fairly strongly held opinion on it.
Yeah, and this makes the solution of what they're going to be doing with the death cost rework all the more interesting, I think.
We'll see what they do.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Anything else on the Q&A from either of you?
No, I think we've nailed
it.
Okay. And I guess it's too early to ask if he's a keeper.
He seems fine.
I mean, yeah. He's,
I think they did a good thing by throwing him up, his face up, right next to upcoming content that people might be excited about.
Boom, we got an upcoming roadmap. The roadmap people have been wanting for a long time is here.
Boom. They gave us three updates that are quarterly large updates, which I'm sure there'll be other odds and ends, smaller updates coming with things, right? Like, we've got these updates, these extra rewards. So it seems like Extinction was kind of the big reward for spring, right?
Yeah.
Or early spring, at least. Yeah. And then they're rolling out, like, here's some extra updates and rewards and things to go with Extinction. I'm hoping that they'll do similar things with these quarterly updates where they say, you know, like this, the one that's scheduled for summer, our big boy Zami is coming back. And they say they're going to have a quest for that. So, like, they're putting together a bunch of smaller things to compartmentalize with this big, like, this is our theme, this is our big release for the year. So, for the period. And I like that. I actually like that a lot.
Yeah.
Right. So, we only got these reward changes, though, because kind of missed the mark.
No, true, but, like, we know that there's other things coming, right? They said the update for next week is going to be follow-on rewards mixing. And this thing that we got this week was truly just a patch. Yeah.
Yeah.
This I wasn't counting this in terms of those content.
So coming soon, new fletching and fire making training stations involving tier 95 arrows.
Hint, hint. Reward drops from the boss, which they, I guess, also mention.
Yeah. And there's a picture of a Zygomite here.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how that's going to play into it with that.
My guess is that when you think about areas of the world that have, I don't want to say open space,
Anachronia.
Maybe are a little bit larger than they needed to be, and are not elsewhere in this roadmap, looking at two wilderness, Anachronia is kind of the place, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine that's an ancient Zygomite. I imagine this fletching and fire making will be Anachronia trees.
Tannis, fletching and fire making. What does this do for you? If you had your way with this on the skilling side? Because I feel like we've been skilling deficient here at the podcast ever since the Elder God Wars. We've been so focused on combat that we haven't had a chance to dive into, you know, a new training method like safe cracking or the like with this. What would you
want from
this?
Brief holiday in.
Well, I mean, So let me understand this right. We'll be somehow making or getting the materials for the tier 95 arrows. Is that what we're fletching?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's I want a steady way to be able to get XP per hour.
Training method.
Yeah. Training method is wonderful. Now, for the fletching, I get it. There's going to be a money element involved, right? Because that's going to be a best in slot arrow. Although,
we don't have the bow yet, but that'll be this summer.
We don't know. Yeah, so
that'll be the best arrows.
Fire making, where we could get the something similar to the rates of the pitch can without having to deal with getting a pitch can would be quite nice. Or just, you know, reimagined altogether.
I'm thinking like, whatchamacallit? Like my brain is going to the curly roots in the Jadinko lair. Because it sounds like if they're going to be fletching with this, I'm presuming the same logs, right? I'm assuming we'll be able to gather. There'll be a gathering element to this too from wood cutting. I'm assuming, right?
They could just use elders. Something.
Maybe it'll use elders. But I'm imagining that these are going to be like something that's slow to obtain. And I guess elders fit that bill. That like. Well, but again, fire making with elders is stuff that kind of already exists and is already kind of not a good show. I wonder if there isn't like we're going to be gathering kindling or wood or something from vines. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But my brain is going like curly roots, and curly roots are god tier XP per hour, but you have to spend time gathering them. And I'm wondering if this fire making is going to be in that same vein.
Okay.
Where it's
all right. Yeah. Well, actually, Tannis, you just said consistent XP per hour, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. The curly roots definitely had its time. Also with the I forget what it was, but you could chop them and burn them at the same time, and then you were playing
Inferno
Adds then.
Like the the Inferno Adds. Yeah. And there's a relic power always adds.
Yeah.
Or so a there, prayer. I think there's a prayer too, superheat form that also does that.
Interesting. We also got the journey to Aya Aktrak. Yaktrak.
Cool.
Iron Man Team Dungeoneering. This is in the Soon category. Then moving into summer, we got the Zamorak boss quest. The fifth boss, Zamorak, with an elite dungeon and a boss battle at the end of it. So this is in an elite dungeon format. Zerdone's in our lore production chat about everything Elder God Wars called that the final boss would be based off an elite dungeon.
Raid.
Yeah, classic raid, not the Mazcab style.
Fighting Moya and whoever else we find.
Yeah, that could be interesting. Tier 95 rewards. Maybe there'll also be a sofa in there at some point. If Maud Black Witch gets her way. Also, a new storyline quest in the summer category. They're not, of course, saying what that is. Then we head into autumn with the Wilderness Reborn, a PVM focus and opt-in PvP, alongside the Death Ghost rework and a Zamorak-themed Yaktrak.
Yeah, I'm excited for new storyline quest. I'm very interested to see where they take that. They said they wanted to go smaller scale with things after Elder God Wars, so I'm hoping. I mean, Arbosandra isn't a new storyline, Grumball, but. You know, there's options there, so I'm curious to see where they take the new storyline.
Yeah. So here's
a bunch of Villajanka on Gilmore or something like that.
So here's how this all pans out in my view, in terms of what we're looking at timeline wise for this. The fletching and fire making stuff is obviously going to be in May. The journey to Aya Yaktrak will come in after the double XP weekend that is undoubtedly going to happen in the last 2 weeks of May, or the double XP week period. Or double XP live in the last 2 weeks of May. Iron Man Team Dungeoneering would make sense to come out before the double XP event. So that's what May looks like. Then that means June, Zamorak boss quest. July, fifth boss Zamorak. August, new storyline. September, Wilderness Reborn. October, Death Cost rework tied in with the Death Halloween event. And then the Zamorak Yaktrak leading up in September, October. With a break until the Christmas one starts at the end of November. And that's what the rest of the year looks like, I think. If they keep to the schedule.
And that would be awesome. Again, they're giving kind of monthly headers to everything. Big fan.
Yeah. And I think that makes the most sense. And I think just based on how everything is laid out on this graphic, that's probably the way things are going to go, barring any inconsistencies in the timeline. I realize that if you are a fan of any science fiction, it might have just sounded like we were talking about something that was influenced by some foreign temporal operative, right, Tanis? Inconsistencies of the timeline.
Yeah.
I do have two comments to make on this too, and one of them is just for, like, very briefly on the tier 95 eras. We do have two tier 95 eras that we've covered extensively on this show previously that are very strong, like just very strong as weapons.
But no one uses them.
Well, I'm a little concerned that if we get even stronger arrows and then a tier 95 bow, that we're going to, I'm concerned about what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
Because the arrows we have are wild.
Also, we're not doing the arrow lesson until, or the arrow micro lesson until these come out.
We're going to talk about ammo, friends. We're going to spend a 5-minute period talking about ammo, but we'll wait until this is out before we do that.
Yeah.
Possibly until we get a bow to go with them. We'll decide on that later.
Yeah.
But the other thing I want to mention, and I don't see if you guys have any thoughts on, and I mentioned this to at least you, Shane, I know, but the Wilderness Reborn is the biggest of all of these things. And I know we've got arrows and boss, and the thing that I'm looking forward to is neither of those. But the Wilderness Reborn, I don't like RuneScape PvP. I find being ganked in the wilderness to be wildly obnoxious, and I avoid it like the plague because I can't be bothered. I don't need to go there, and so I don't. I'm very interested to see what they do with this in terms of, they said they want to make it dangerous, and I think I am not the only one to think about like environmental hazards with that in terms of like, can you only spend a certain amount of time there? Is it a time-gated thing? Is it a, you know, levels-gated thing? Is it like,
and how do you do opt-in PvP?
I have thoughts on that too, but just in terms of making it obnoxious, risk versus reward. I'm interested to see how they do that because I don't want the wilderness to be annoying.
Yeah.
I don't go to the wilderness now because it is annoying to be in the wilderness. Obnoxious even because of the people, not because of the place. And if they want to make the place obnoxious, that's not going to make things better for me.
No. And
no, it's annoying.
Tanis can tell you about his experience with storms.
Yeah. I hate the wilderness. I just.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
You know, I mean, What does this tell you? We can't make it not annoying because it might annoy somebody. That sucks.
Well, I don't care about it being like, I just, it's obnoxious. It's not fun to be there because it is.
It should just be done. It should be done. This thing's been on life support for however many years. It's good space that we could use for good people.
Yeah.
And good skilling.
Judgy Tanis, I'm with you. So here's my thoughts, though. If I had to ask either of you, when they did world events, which world event was the best world event?
Two.
What was the thing with World Event 2? You could get like triple or quintuple, whatever it was, event progress if you had your PvP on. I want them to make the wilderness like that. And maybe it's going to be like, I was saying there's like, maybe you do a Zamorak Ceridoman warbands that are roaming the place. And that's a really good skilling method that, you know, like wilderness warbands now, but they're constantly moving and they're different themes. And they're just, if they just slapped World Event 2 with new skins into the wilderness.
You know, yeah, I was going to say, actually. We could just do that.
I would be so pleased with that. If that was just a skilling method that was really good and really obnoxious. Like, yes, cool, awesome, do it. Like, give it to me now. So that's what my hope is for that. Is that opt-in PvP is, like, just incredibly rewarding. But also something that is going to, like, bring people in to do it. You know? To give that a little bit of life. And make it not terribly punishing and terribly obnoxious when you die, right? That, like, you know, there's some faction-based thing to that. There's some minigame to it. I don't know, right?
We have to consider
it system. But
And that was the key, though. It was safe, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was just fun.
Well, if you died, it was annoying because you lost your event progress or whatever. Like, you got event progress. Like, there were reasons to PvP that were separate from, like, I don't know. So that would need a closer monocle, but we all look back fondly on World Event 2. That was PvP, I would say, done about as well as it's been done in RuneScape.
There's also the Darkscape angle, but that's an interesting other topic on itself.
Like, warbands are the only time that Warbands and the poor people who use the Abyss are the only times I know of where there's some PvP and like activity heavily in the wilderness where people are actually intentionally fighting and doing things, other than like the occasional PvP clan war in the wilderness.
Yeah, and you know, based on where we're at with this, the design is probably set at this point, so it's going to be interesting.
That's six months out.
Yeah,
I know. I'm sure they're working on some parts of it, but
so there might regardless. Be time to push it in the right direction. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how all this pans out and what the community has to say.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah,
that one in particular is something that I'm looking forward to being able to see. So we'll see.
All right. So that concludes the live stream portion. Oddment Store and Treasure Hunter changes. Were these controversial this week?
Let's be very frank. They nerfed Oddments. They nerfed Treasure Hunter. They removed the ability to choose your prize from Treasure Hunter. I think that was needed, personally. I know that it's not great. My alt got way too much experience from keys from quests, because I got 450 or whatever keys from quests, and I used them, and you know, especially during the times when you like rewards were tripled or whatever it was, all the promos going on at the end of last year when I was playing that alt and doing those quests, like Treasure Hunter was ridiculous and gave me way too many skills that I just straight up didn't train for like 80 levels.
Yeah, okay. So oddments were nerfed. They added the legendary water and fire lichens into the oddment store for 50,000 oddments each. So you don't need to pay real money to get a legendary pet anymore. That's mm-hmm. good.
You don't need to have premier or rune coins.
Yeah.
So yeah, big ups.
Removed randomized sales from keys, lamps, stars, and slightly lower their prices, as well as doubling the daily purchase caps on these items as well, and consolidated various items in the oddment store into packs. So that is that's a nerf. I think.
Yeah.
Now,
because I mean, that's the thing, is that people only ever bought them when they were like 50 or 75% off, right? And so the price of them effectively for those people was that 75% off price. That was exactly the price of a lamp. They just didn't get them very frequently.
Yeah.
This now allows you to spend them as intended, right? Where you get some XP when you want it.
So. UX-wise, added more details to the consumable items preview in the oddment store, new banner, banners every day showing your daily purchase cap. Oddment store now uses the preview screen of the spotlight tab. Oddment store item cards now show prices with separators at a cost of 1,000 or more. Increase the size of the card icons, remove low resolution card images. Stop the scroll position in the oddment store from resetting when you click on an item card. Standardized names and descriptions. Updated the order of items cards. And stopped items from spilling out their text area by truncating their names and adding an ellipsis for those over a certain length. So that's the UX side of it.
It looks better.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to add for
Treasure Hunter. The multiple choice Treasure Hunter prize selection screen has been removed. There we go. Oddment prizes have been removed from Treasure Hunter. The number of portable items has been decreased. The convert confirm functionality was changed and will no longer ask for confirmation on white or yellow prizes, but will for higher tiers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The spring cleaner is now available on the loot table again if you don't own it. You can no longer get lucky items as a reward from super rare chests. So those are gone. I know those were controversial back in the day. Combat dummies no longer appear at the red or purple prize tiers. Spirit gems can be noted, and protein packs have been replaced with protein-specific items.
Just good general balance changes that were probably overdue, because this content doesn't get the oversight, I think, from the dev team that other content does. Good balance pass, in my opinion. Just all around. The only thing I'll say is that I wish they'd changed those banners for the oddment store to tell you that things refresh daily. Because if I was a new player, I would 100% think that I could only ever buy 60 lamps, and I would spend all of my oddments to try to take advantage of that before whatever time link. Because there's no time set on those that's visible.
Janice, is there a negative here that we're missing? Because I feel like the community
Well, I mean, I think the nerf is more obvious on the treasure hunter side.
On the oddman side.
See, I don't look for what Daxi said about it in practical terms. Yes, but this is actually brilliant on Jagex's part because they're not actually raising the prices. They're just getting rid of a discount. I mean, this isn't the same as raising right. your prices and like, then putting something on sale.
This like, is the equivalent is like the effective price has gone up, right? The price that people are actually paying for them has changed in a way that is negative to people. And I agree. I agree that this is the way that they're just like, they're just saying we're not doing these anymore. And that's fine. But people's oddments will go less far than they went before this update. Which is a good thing. And then again, same with Treasure Hunter, where you don't get to choose between three prizes every time you roll a prize. They're just, this is what you get. And so if you just want lamps and stars, or if you just want combat dummies or things you, or protean packs, you can't select those. It removes a lot of the, like, really heavy stacked up XP that you could get from Treasure Hunter and kind of, like, tones that down or spreads it out more, which I like.
I mean, that is true. I wish there was another way because I think that the choice added to the palpability of Treasure Hunter and
it's less was of a box system.
Yeah. And so that was a step backwards, I think. And I don't know if that is masked in the way of, oh, we're reducing XP and balancing things.
I think your part of it was actually the truth of the matter. I think that the balance thing, they did this because it was an easy way to balance that just saying this isn't a thing anymore because it wasn't a thing for every promo before anyways, but and you'll notice they've been running promos pretty constantly since then, so people don't notice, but yeah, they've like I hear you. I think it's the other way around though. I think the balance change is like, this is the thing that we wanted to get out of it, but visually we're just going to make it so that, you know, you don't get, like, I'm with you that I like the choice. I really heavily dislike loot box systems. But at least with this, it's like, especially since they removed those ultra rare prizes, there's not a ton of stuff that is just, if you buy 500 keys, you'll roll one or two items off of X table, you know? The X table on this is like, oh, congratulations, you got 1,000 proteins now. Or like maybe you'll hit the 200 mil, but like, you know, you can get that stuff elsewhere. There's no uniques. There's no mounts like other games that have mounts or skins or pets or whatever. You don't get those anymore off of our ultra rare table. It's really just
well, you will when the next quarterly rare comes in.
I mean, true, but they're not. It's not like constant, right?
True.
And it wasn't like you were able to select your prize during any of those anyways. You couldn't select to get the seasonal rare unless it was part of the promotion to like pick one of these bonuses.
And I think part of the reason they did that, adding in the ability to choose your prize, was that whole idea of removing that blind chance and that you're going to have a certain chance of getting something. But you're still going to have a choice of whether it's the lamp, the star, or the protean pack. So,
right. Well, and that's that was the problem is that it let people stack up 80 billion proteins way too easily and use them later. It let, you know, those kind of things that like it was a little unbalanced and they add some balance back into the game.
Yeah. And that's
removing the choice. And again, I hate the loot box system, but they've removed a lot of the like nastiness about loot boxes and just said, you get X rolls, the rolls will give you on average these things, and that's fine.
And I'm trying to figure out where the negative in this is because I don't see it. And if anybody listening to this does have the negative idea.
Oh, Shane, I can tell you.
Okay.
My alt has earned, again, through all of those keys that I got, like I earned more than 99 construction just in proteans.
Okay,
I
so it's just.
Protean every time I could.
So it's just that you're not going to get the same amount of XP that you would previously.
Well, I wanted stackable planks so that I could fully AFK construction training.
Fair enough.
You know,
I don't have to deal with the butler or anything.
This will be a good experiment too, because if the purchase of keys goes down, then that tells you something. It tells you what people are buying Treasure Hunter and what they're spending.
Well, if they want those proteins now, they just buy more keys.
And then buy them from the oddment store.
Well, they could, I suppose, but the oddments probably could just get spent on the proteins if they want anyways, so. I mean, basically, most of the Treasure Hunter rewards are now available on the oddment store. Most of the regular ones, anyways, the commonly seen ones.
So then that raises the question, why not just sell bulk oddments?
Well, because why then not? You actually let people buy what they want.
True.
And that they definitely make more money by having people roll on the wheel. I mean, that's the whole point of a loot box system.
Yeah.
They're making a palatable loot box system by not hiding things behind it.
Well, let's just be happy that they're not putting the new tier 90 and tier 95 weapons behind a loot box then, eh?
Oh, you want to talk about RuneScape's community being salty? That.
Yeah. Yeah. The
that's
top,
a hypothetical
the
for
top,
day.
The top 1% DPSers in Stowe would like a word.
Mm-hmm. I figured that's where you were going, Shane. Yeah.
Pay to win, not our game.
No, please not in our ass. Please not in our ass.
You can already pay to max. It's expensive, but you can do it.
Yeah.
They removed a lot of that with this, too, but whatever.
All right. Well, that's pretty much it then. I think with that, we can move on to our picks of the week. I feel like that covered it well. And there's only one pick of the week this week, and it's something we've all discussed. And I'll let Thaxi take it away from here.
Yeah, I mean, it's an older article. I don't even know when this is from. It's a New York Times, and it is 2014. Oh, it's not as old as I thought. Okay. It's a New York Times article. It's definitely U.S.-centric. So if you're not from North America, maybe still interesting to you. It's the New York Times dialect quiz. The article title, How Y'all Use and You Guys Talk. You can just Google New York Times dialect quiz. It'll come up. Or you can find the link in the show notes on the RSBNB website. But very simply, it asks you a series of questions that, I mean, how long? Tanis, you did it while we were doing our pre-show today, I think, probably.
Yeah.
Less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Very seriously, maybe less than 5, but you can do it on your phone very easily. The interface for it is nice. And it's just asking a series of questions, kind of like, you know, what do you call a place where you drive through to pick up alcohol or to purchase alcohol? What do you call two places that are, you know, diagonal from each other across an intersection? And it'll give you, you know, options for those terms, or I don't have a term for this locally. Kind of a thing, and it then places you based on that. It'll build a heat map of the United States in terms of where your dialect is most like. And it seems to be relatively accurate for most people that I've seen take it.
Well, I'll let you guys go first, since obviously I'm not from the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, mine has actually tracked where I've lived. So I've lived both Northeast, Northwest, and Midwest of the United States and taken it from all three places. And it tends to, generally speaking, kind of track where I've been lately, the words that I most commonly associate with things. So, yeah.
Tennis. I mean, it was spot on for me. Yeah. I thought there would be like some Southern influence, but I think that comes
very Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's very. Almost a triangle between like where I'm at and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funny, but I think it's because, you know, as you're growing up, the words that you use, this is kind of like, you know, judging that versus I think stuff I picked up from the South was just a draw and the way that I say them.
Yeah. This is your actual words and not your accent.
Yeah.
So if you're interested about where in the United States you are most similar to in terms of the language that you use, it's a cool thing. It's just a nice little, it's a widget.
And, for the record, mine was Buffalo, New York, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yeah. Couple of good relatively kind of Midwestern boys here.
Yeah.
mine is relatively similar areas. Every time I take this, I bounce a little bit because I have lived in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I was in Pennsylvania, it was kind of the New Jersey, New York, Philly kind of region. I think I got, and then, you know, when I was up in Washington State, it was, you know, Eastern Washington and Idaho was where it pinned me, which was fair because I'd been working in those areas over past summer. So I don't know. It's relatively accurate, it seems. Yeah. So
there we go.
Good job to whoever.
There we go. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We only have a few achievements this week, so I'll just rattle them off. On the 26th, we have Azadia with 99 summoning, Dat Engineer with 200 mil smithing XP, Aomi with 99 dungeoneering on the 24th, and Matt 258 with 120 invention on April 21st. So there
woo,
we have it.
Yeah, oh. Woo, awesome. You guys did so good. Yeah.
And with that, Tanis, what have you been up to on RS?
Well, I've been trying to not finish that boss, even though you guys have so generously offered to help me. And I will take you up on it, I think.
Good.
It's just, yeah, dragging myself away from this anvil, because... Oh,
my man's been on a smith and tear.
I'm on a smith and tear, and the oh my god, like I haven't even put a dent in my stock, and I'm making money. Well, I mean, I'm making like
a double XP is coming as well.
PBM money, you know, like yeah, this is it's good stuff, and it's my style. Like, I like to be relaxed. I like to click, and I've been watching shows and stuff, and there's no other, you know, this is the only game that I play that I can watch something and play. I've been enjoying the smithing, you know. It's gonna be a long road, that's all right, because gonna be rich.
Are you making Elder Rune stuff? Are you making masterwork?
No, Elder Rune plate bodies.
Gotcha. I wonder, because I always wonder how the masterwork market goes around DXPs. They're like, are there a bunch of people doing Slayer with it trimmed who just like eat all of the regular masterwork armor? Does it go way up in price? I don't know. I should look.
You know, I'm not sure. The thing with masterwork is it's so much work, but
yeah,
you get token XP for it, and so yeah.
I mean, Tennis, do you need smithing XP?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I mean...
You're not at 120? You're not at 200 mil yet? I didn't know.
No.
One day.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I didn't do it when it was fast, so, mm-hmm. You know, but that's okay. And I found, like, a very... What I'm doing gives you kind of the most GP, but it's also, like, decent experience, not bad experience. So yeah. I mean, it's not the top end with like burial.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, to make this kind of money and get this good of XP, yeah, I'm pretty happy.
And we also have a micro lesson on how to set up for that.
That's true.
And we both learned some things along the way about what to sure use did. And such. So that's on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. As for me this week, it's mainly just been raids and the IS skilling, since that has come out, and finishing, the act track, down to the wire last week. I was on that, believe it or not. So, that's what I've been up to. oh boy, that was weird. But, with that, it just felt nice being able to go to that environment and skill, and, you know, despite what people are saying, that it took so long to get there, I really enjoyed it once we got we got the upgraded rates for it. So I'm happy with it. How about you, Taxi?
Very much the same. Done a couple of raids this week. Logged on to do some. I'm, you know, maintaining some dailies, doing my invention, doing my getting some of just the odds and ends picked up. I guess the IS scaling is now going to be part of those regular. Every once in a while things, because then want that Master Quest cape back, hopefully before the
next content drop, right?
Well, not before the next content, but I want it done before the grace period's up, so
true.
I don't lose it.
True.
Or at least I don't lose it for terribly long.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's been my RuneScape has been a lot of that. Got my Ring of Vigor passive. Got that rolling. I guess I need to go and fix all my presets. I hadn't even noticed, but I noticed that I had an extra spot in my preset. I'm like, Yeah, because like, some of my presets do have extra spots, right? Because there's like intentionally, like if I'm going to, if it's a preset that I might use for like God Wars 2 or something where I don't know if I'll need to eat a piece of food if I start with full HP before the first kill and I want to be able to pick up a drop or something, like I'll have an extra inventory spot. And it just like clicked in my brain that when I've been loading my raid presets this week, there's an empty spot because my vigor is not there. Which, oof, my rotation must be rusty if I didn't notice not having it. Ooh. But yeah, that's
yeah. Speaking of this, of rotation, rotation rusty on that the day before we did our most recent raid trip. So the cycle before that, I went. And then I did my first Reaper task in about 2.5 weeks because I kind of just took a break from them. And in terms of rustiness on the rotation, just, you know, rustiness in general, I did the entire set of raids and the Karapak Reaper without activating the God Book, and I actually felt a DPS difference from that. So I was like, oh, that's what was happening with that.
7-8%, yeah. Yeah, of course. That's noticeable.
Yeah, it is.
That's 25,000 damage off your phase on Karapak.
Exactly.
Like, huh,
exactly.
I'm not making phase anymore.
I'm not supposed to be seeing the lightning phase.
Yeah, exactly.
I got it a couple times, but hey, nonetheless, just a good reminder of where we've been and where we're going. So thank you everybody for being here for this episode. You can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com, and please do subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Amazon, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. There's where we post the episodes, the nibbles, and of course the micro lessons as such, the micro lesson this week on vigor and ultimate rotations. But I believe that's all we have for this week. So if everybody else is good, I think we can call this done, and we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSVNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Ciao.